A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello and welcome to the Karma You podcast. This is your host, Chloe Brotheridge. I'm a coach, a hypnotherapist, and I'm the author of The Anxiety Solution and Brave New Girl. And this podcast is all about helping you to become your calmest, happiest, and most confident self. So today I'm talking to the really very lovely and smart and wonderful Dr. Sophie Mort, who is a psychotherapist. And basically, I would like to be her friend. I think you'll agree. She's pretty amazing. And we discuss basically one of the most helpful approaches to self-love that I have ever heard. We get into the incredibly common struggles that you probably believe only affect you. We talk about imposter syndrome and how to stop it from actually holding you back. And we talk about creating distance from negative self-talk. So this is a really juicy and relevant episode. I think you're going to love it. Just to remind you about the free resources that I have for confidence over on my website, you can head over to karmayou.com/confidence and get loads of freebies over there. I'll also tell you about my latest podcasts and courses and offers that I have, as well as my one-on-one sessions and my app. So check all of that out at karmayou.com. So let's get into the interview with Dr. Sophie Mort.
Welcome, Dr. Soph. How are you? Thanks for joining me.
How are you?
I'm good. Can you please share with everyone listening what it is that you do and how you got to where you are today?
Yeah. So hi, I'm Dr. Soph. Sophie's totally fine. I'm a clinical psychologist and I try and get therapy, well, psychology out of the therapy room and into people's lives in ways that make sense to them. So that means I share psychological information in written form. So on a blog, on Instagram. I work with acts like Happy Not Perfect, and I'm doing all sorts of other things I can't tell you about right now, but that will involve disseminating all the psychological information that people need and can't necessarily access because there are so many barriers to getting therapy. And then I also have a private clinic where I see a few people every day in online therapy. How did I get here? Was that the next question?
Yeah, I'd love to hear.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, I basically spent my whole life studying. That's probably the short answer. So I did an undergraduate in psychology, a master's in neuroscience, and a doctorate in clinical psychology, working in the NHS that whole time. And up until 2 years ago, I worked in Homerton Hospital in London, which is near yours. And basically, I just reached a point where whilst I love the NHS and think it's probably the most important thing that we have as British people, I needed to be doing something else because people are on waiting lists for a really long time. And often what's happening is they'd get to the top of the waiting list, they'd get to that one seat in front of me, and irrespective of what service I was working in, they were coming with the same issues, which was, for example, why do I feel this way? Such as, why am I panicking? Why am I feeling distressed? What are emotions? Does it mean I'm crazy if I'm experiencing emotions, struggles, anxiety? And what are the most basic skills I need to know now? And often after that first session of giving people this, what I would call kind of psychology 101, people didn't necessarily need support anymore. Now that's not the same for everyone, but I decided if I could find a way to give everyone this basic information before they need it, then maybe we wouldn't have people's distress escalating as much as it often does. And maybe that would take away some of the burden on waiting lists and help everyone to understand themselves a little bit more. So that's when I set out on my own, and it's just gone from there.
Amazing. Yeah, I love what you do and the information that you share, and how you share it is really, really inspiring and useful. It's such an interesting thing that you mentioned there about people thinking that they're crazy for feeling anxious, or maybe they're having panic attacks. And, you know, I've had panic attacks myself, and you do feel like you're going to go crazy. That is a big fear. Mine.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had panic attacks and I genuinely thought it was the end of the world.
Yeah, yeah. And so sometimes it's enough, it sounds like you're saying, to just say, actually, it's normal to feel this way. It doesn't mean you're going to lose your mind.
Well, remember that first, I'm not going to therapize you, but remember that first panic attack. So I remember, not necessarily my first panic attack, but I remember many of them, because the reason I became a psychologist is actually that about the age of 18, I started having panic attacks. And no one could tell me what was going on for me. And when I went to the doctors, they told me I was depressed, which I wasn't. I was having panic attacks and didn't know what was going on and just needed some help. And what happened, okay, I'll talk about it for me so you don't, I don't have to grill you. When I first had those experiences of panic, my mind went to, what could this be? The only reference I had was, well, it feels like I'm losing my mind. Anytime someone's talked about mental health in movies, in the news, in my social circle, it's been talked about as that person's losing their mind, they're crazy. I must be going crazy. So the first sensation of panic that I rose in my body quickly escalated to panic attacks, because it's like, oh my God, I'm going crazy. If I'd had that experience and known anytime your brain detects something dangerous or that it thinks is dangerous or stressful in your environment, it only has one way of being and preparing and keeping you safe. And that's to prepare you to run or fight for your life. Your heart will race, your palms will sweat, your mind will race. All of these things will happen and it's totally normal. And we call that anxiety leading up to a panic attack. Then I might have been like, I know what this is. And if someone had told me it's totally normal, like, okay, it feels like I'm gonna die, but apparently it's totally normal. And if someone had told me the way that you cope is doing X, Y, and Z, I would have done those things. And those first few panic attacks would have been interpreted in a very different way than me as an 18-year-old thinking I was losing my mind and having nowhere to turn to. That kind of first moment when people start to struggle is a real opportunity to help, because it's the difference between someone going away and thinking there's something wrong with me and I need to hide that and I feel ashamed of it, and someone going away and saying, I know I can speak to someone, I know what I can do, and I know that this is normal.
Such a simple but powerful thing just to know and to be aware of. I was curious about what your opinion was about kind of online therapy accounts, or people, you know, therapists on Instagram, or people who have set up accounts where they're talking about mental health, they're talking about giving their advice. Do you feel like that is helpful, or can it be counterproductive, or can it be overwhelming? What's your opinion on that?
Well, I always think there's never one answer and it's almost always all at once. Okay, so I think therapists setting up accounts on Instagram has been a cultural phenomenon that has already more people than we'll ever know. What I mean by that is psychology and therapy-based information is normally kept behind closed doors, behind waiting lists, kept in universities and dusty old textbooks. It's deeply inaccessible. A lot of the books I've read, I mean, I've had to almost, you know, have a dictionary out for every single one. Like, what does that mean? And I literally have a doctorate in this. So that's what I mean about it being a struggle. And so therapists setting up spaces where they're making information widely available and accessible mean that people anywhere in the world can now learn about themselves. That is a social justice issue, right? People should be able to learn about themselves, and now people can. Next thing. Yes, it's deeply overwhelming because suddenly you have thousands of people offering advice. And actually, it's not just therapists. We have people without any kind of clinical qualification with lived experience offering advice. Fantastic. We have therapists offering advice, and we don't know where to turn. You could read one post on Instagram, for example, that tells you to do X, and then you read another one that says, don't do X, do Y. And then another one saying, no, it's Z. So it's really overwhelming. We don't know who to trust often because we don't actually know the people in real life who are giving the information out. And yeah, sometimes it's risky. It's true. You know, Instagram, for example, isn't a private platform. If you put a comment up, anyone can read it. So, and there's no proper guidelines yet in the UK, for example, on how therapists should exist in the online space. So I think it's a game changer. The reality is social media is detrimental to people's health. 1 billion people now use Instagram, for example. Therapists, I think, have a responsibility to meet people where they're at and overcome barriers that get in the way of people understanding themselves. But we need to be really careful.
And you'd have a good answer to this. You'd have a good answer.
I mean, I'm really sitting in this really thought. I've now got my knee up on the foot up on the chair, like knee up. I've got my fist in my face. Like, I'm really giving this thought. I mean, what do you think about that? Because you're a therapist in the online space.
Exactly. I mean, personally, I sometimes feel a bit torn because I get a lot of people DMing me wanting like one-on-one advice, but it's very difficult to do that, and obviously not a good idea to do that when they're not your client. So
very problematic. A strong DM policy was the thing that really changed it for me. You know, as in, I'm afraid I cannot answer any personal questions.
Yeah.
Is that what you've had to kind of
So trying to explain to people that without knowing their history and being their therapist, I can't give people advice. And it's
incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, so that was my main thought on it. But yeah, I think it's complicated is the answer. It's complicated.
And I think as long as you're really clear, so I have like a really strong policy on how I use Instagram. And I often post, for example, I've got this slide series as well as lots of disclaimers, that this is generalist information. This isn't about anyone in particular. This is the kind of stuff that you could find in a book on a shelf. And yeah, if you DM me, I will have to politely decline, or I might not even see the message because we get so many messages, right? That, yeah, we cannot give people personalized information, but there are crisis lines we could, for example, already have on our page near us.
Yeah, definitely. In terms of the sorts of issues that you tend to see or the things that you come across again and again, can you describe? I always think it's helpful for people to feel a bit less alone in just hearing about how common some of these things are. Can you describe a little bit about the sorts of issues that you help people with and the things you come across a lot?
Absolutely. So I'd say, as a rule, I'm a generalist. So I'm not a therapist who has a specific model that they work in, a specific client group or diagnosis. So I would say, outside of my clinic, generally what I'm coming across is an extreme feeling of failure, an extreme concern that we are not enough as we are. The consequences of that often being, for example, perfectionism, people pleasing, a really strong negative inner critic, constant comparison of the self to others, and a real lack of understanding across the world, not because of people's fault, a real lack of understanding of why it's totally normal that these things would happen. That's not because of ignorance, it's because we're never taught it. And I would say that in my clinic, I see that, but mainly I work with women in their 20s and 30s who, for example, on paper might look like they're killing it, but on the inside are really struggling. So for example, OCD, anxiety.
Yeah, and it is interesting how common those things are. And yet when you are experiencing that deep sense that you're a failure, that you're not good enough, you're bad, you feel like you're the only one in the world who's ever felt like that.
Yes, it's so alienating. And actually, that's something that's so smart. So firstly, because we're not given this information to understand why it's normal to feel like that, and because it's rarely talked about, because there's so much taboo about seeming imperfect, for example, or vulnerable, it's a very smart system that's been set up to keep us in this feeling of vulnerability, this feeling of failure, which means we're really susceptible, for example, to marketing, for example, to anything that people can sell us to fix us. You know, at the most simple level, part of the reason we all feel like we're failing is because we're constantly surrounded by images in magazines, TV, movies, of these people who are deemed to be worthy and lovable. And they look a certain way, they laugh a certain way, they act a certain way, they have everything. and we're taught these people are what we should aspire to. We're never really told that those people don't even really exist either. They've been lit in a certain way, made up in a certain way. They've been created as characters. And we're rarely exposed to people with flaws or vulnerabilities who are struggling. So our brain basically learns those people are good, those people are bad. Our brain is really unnuanced. It's just good, safe, bad, dangerous. And because none of us can kind of reach perfect level, we've also been sold that perfectionism is possible. The moment we look in the mirror, the moment we start trying to do anything, pretty much our whole existence is, I'm falling short of that person. I'm falling short of this idea I've been sold. My worth is based on my productivity and how I come across in the world. So yeah, people aren't failing. They're just unable to ever become this perfect ideal that we've been sold and have been told is possible.
Yeah, totally. And I think even though we've had, you know, the body positivity movement and a lot of positive, ideas in that direction of, you know, it's okay to just be how you are and embrace how you look. Then we've got things like cancel culture, where someone made a mistake 10 years ago and they get completely attacked. And it's this sense that you're not allowed to make a mistake or ever have made a mistake because that's terrible.
Yeah. Whereas people, I was thinking this week about how I'm less interested in the mistakes people made and more interested in how they recover from the mistake, how they learn from it and how they apologize for it. And cancel culture is something that doesn't allow for growth. And it's interesting because that creates more problems inside us. It perpetuates this idea of I need to be perfect on the finished product immediately, because if I make a mistake, I will be destroyed. We literally see that happening in the media all the time. So it's not just an idea we have in our heads. It's a reality we've seen. If I mess up, I'll be abandoned, which is pretty much all of our biggest fears, I think. But what's interesting, what you say about body positivity, is it made me think of a couple of things, which is what we often do as humans is we kind of get these new ideas, such as body positivity, the idea that we can love ourselves whatever size we're at, but they often end up being co-opted by these by people who say, well, you can love yourself, but as long as you're this size, up to this point, as long as you are like that, but not too much. That's the first thing I was thinking. And the second thing I was thinking is body neutrality, I think, is a more interesting, not more interesting, that's a terrible thing to say, is a line of thinking that I've been following and researching the people who talk about it. Because body positivity still has this message of we need to be beautiful to be worthy. Yes, you can be beautiful at any size, but you must be beautiful. Whereas body neutrality, if I understand it right, suggests it just doesn't matter what your body is. It just doesn't matter who you are. Your worth isn't based on that whatsoever. We want to be neutral about how we show up, which means actually we can be more positive about who we are. Mm. Our worth is not based on the body that we have. Yeah, we just want to be healthy and able to think about stuff that isn't our body.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And yeah, I've definitely heard that idea before of just, yeah, not thinking about your body and just being in the moment and being yourself and not having to, to try to think you're beautiful. Like, it doesn't matter.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, because often what happens in those situations is you just think, no matter what I do, I can't find myself beautiful. So I'm failing at body positivity, even though I believe it's a really great idea. And body neutrality, I suppose, isn't saying like, whatever body, whatever. It's like, okay, no, body, you are part of me. I will look after you, but my emotions towards you don't have to be based around whether I think that you're beautiful or not.
Mm, yeah, such a good thing to remember. I saw one of your posts on Instagram about self-love being an action. Can you explain what you mean, what you share about that?
Absolutely. So, I mean, there's posts everywhere about self-love, isn't there? And for a really long time, I was like, I really agree. We need to love ourselves because we spend all our time in our thoughts. We spend all our time with ourselves. And actually, when we don't feel good about ourselves, it makes everything else harder. The only thing is that me and a lot of people I spoke to were thinking was, but I don't have the warm and fuzzies about myself all the time. As I said, it's almost impossible if you grow up in this capitalist society to believe that you're enough the way you are. So I was thinking, okay, what does this even mean? And have you read the book All About Love by Bell Hooks?
No, but I will write that down.
Yeah, it's just extraordinary. And she in there talks about how actually a lot of us don't truly know what love means, because we've all been raised by different people who were all raised by different people. And we all internalize love to be either what we see in the movies, this deeply romantic, often sexual, really warm, like, oh, I know I'm in love with you feeling. And or internalize the way that we were raised as kids. So for example, you might be told as a little one, you love your family no matter what, even if they're nasty to you. You might be taught love is pain. You might be taught love is doing what you are told from people that are in your family. So we often have these quite conflicting messages about what love is. And then she talks about this man, M. Scott Peck. Ooh, I assume it's man. I actually don't know. Let's say they to make it easier. M. Scott Peck has this quote, which is love is an action. And it's the idea that you extend yourself for the nurturing of your own or another person's soul. And I don't think he means, I think he says soul or spirit or faith. I think he means as in like the growth of yourself or another. And I just love that, because suddenly if you think about that in terms of self-love, you don't have to have this warm and fuzzy feeling about yourself. What you're doing is you're choosing to act. You're choosing to ask yourself, okay, how are you? What do you feel? What do you need right now in this moment? How do I extend myself to meet your needs, basically? And suddenly that means that it doesn't matter how you feel, you can constantly be choosing to show yourself self-love. So did that make sense? I feel like that was a roundabout answer to your question.
No, it really does. I love that. And, you know, when you're feeling really rubbish or you're experiencing depression or your self-esteem is on the floor, to try to love yourself can be like this impossible faraway thing and another thing that you've got to try and do and fail at.
Oh, I know. It's just relentless, isn't it? This list of things that we need to do.
Yeah.
Self-love is choosing to show up to yourself, I think, over and over. And sometimes realizing that maybe self-love is realizing you can't show up to yourself. And what you need in that moment is to be okay with the fact that you can't show up to yourself.
Totally. Yeah. That's really reframed things for me a lot and so, so helpful. Yeah. I wanted to ask you another thing I saw you writing about was, and I realized that people are listening to a podcast about mental health right now. And maybe you've read a lot of, you know, self-help books, people listening, but I saw you suggest somewhere that maybe all these podcasts and self-help books could be an avoidance strategy. And I was really curious for you to unpack that a little bit and share what you meant by that.
Okay, so I love podcasts and I love books. And I think, and as I said, I think we need more and more access to information that can help us understand ourselves. At the same time, it can become an avoidance strategy when, for example, you notice that you are worried about something, or you want to learn more about yourself, or you have a certain emotional feeling. And so what you do is you buy a self-help book or you line up the next podcast, and suddenly, because you've done something, you feel better. So you're like, oh, don't really need to read it or listen to it. So you leave it, and then suddenly the feeling comes back. You're like, oh, damn it, I'll line up the next podcast or get the next self-help book. But you never actually read it or never actually do it. So I know a lot of people, myself included, that have had whole bookcases of self-help and whole podcast lists that I want to listen to. But just the act of lining them up has made me feel better. But I've never actually gone there. Next thing is people do the opposite. I want to grow. I want to understand myself. I want to feel better. So I consume as much information as I possibly can. Podcast after podcast, book after book. Never actually taking time, for example, to reflect past the point of discomfort or engage in a really honest, painful dialogue about what it means, or to engage in the exercises that are recommended. The moment you finish one book or podcast, you line up the next straight away. So you're constantly consuming, staying in your head and in your logic, but at a very superficial level without ever really bringing it into your body. So ideally what we do we learn about ourselves, we pause, we ask what that means to us, when the urge to avoid or move on comes up, we sit with it. We do the exercises that are recommended. And after that, if we feel we need more information, we move on to the next one.
Yeah, I think I know I've definitely done that as well, to read through a self-help book, but have every intention of doing the exercises. But because it's a bit hard and actually is causing me to actually have to reflect on things that might be painful, I might just avoid them. But actually, we're going to get so much more from it if we can properly engage with it and stay with it, even if it's uncomfortable, rather than just trying to get our next fix of the next thing.
And it's funny because I absolutely do what you're saying. And often I think, I'll come back to it. I'll come back and do that exercise. And I really in the moment believe it. And then like a few days later, I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. And then I wonder, why is that? Does it make you feel uncomfortable? And I think most of us think that knowledge is power. Don't get me wrong. Knowledge is power. But most of us think knowledge is enough. And it's not. Most of the healing we need to engage in actually involves our body, involves our emotions and moving through things.
Okay, so yeah, it's not quite enough just to read a self-help, but you have to engage with it, let the wisdom of the self-help book sort of move into your body and do the work.
Yeah, and learning about yourself often really sucks. Yeah, like you're going to find out things about yourself that you may not like, and that's of course then we would avoid. So a little bit of self-kindness, a little bit of that self-love. So, okay, I've reached a point in this book where I'm just really overwhelmed. So what do I need to do? I need to take a break, but my next act of self-love is making sure I come back. So the action to extend myself to meet my soul's needs.
Thank you for saying that, because I think there can be this idea of it should just be positive. You read a self-help book, you listen to a podcast, get your positive vibes on, you know, and maybe people don't experience that. And actually it is painful, like looking at yourself.
Oh, it's ruthless.
Yeah.
Like my therapist, I've known her, I don't know how long for. And, you know, once you reach that point where you feel really safe in therapy and you're able to really look at the things that you really struggle with, and you look into the darkest corners of your mind, it can be horrifying. And without someone there who makes you feel safe enough to talk about it, or safe enough to know that they're not going to judge you on top of how much you're going to judge yourself, it can be almost impossible to do that. And so that's another thing, is self-help books may not be enough for everyone. You might actually need to speak to someone. But at the same time, self-help books can be a real dream, because there's no one looking at you whilst you're doing the exercises. You can do it in a deeply personal way where you know you're not being judged by anyone else.
Yeah, I think that's an important point, that it can be, you need to have a therapist that you can trust and really open up to, because it can be very confronting, I guess, to really go into all the things that you're ashamed of. And
absolutely. And totally normal, but your mind won't tell you your mind won't tell you it's normal.
Is there anything that you're struggling with at the moment, and how are you managing it right now?
So I think most people going through what we've been going through in this country, so lockdown, every day is a new challenge. But I suppose what I was really aware of this morning, I was writing an article for someone and then speaking to you, and I noticed that this week there's been a lot of imposter syndrome. So really, and performance anxiety, yay! This really strong sense that why me? It should be someone else. If I do this, am they really going to find out that I'm a fraud? Am I the right person? Am I good enough? Am I going to mess this up? That's definitely the nicer version of the way that the thoughts go in my mind. They're much more brutal than that. So lots of imposter syndrome. And I suppose it really helps being a therapist who works with these kind of quite strong feelings of failure anxiety, performance anxiety anyway. So how do I show up for myself when that happens? Well, I suppose firstly, I'm honest about it. I surround myself with people who make it possible to talk about these things. I know that imposter syndrome and performance anxiety are totally natural things that happen to everyone. You know, our brain is almost totally negatively skewed. We've survived as a species by our brain constantly scanning the environment for everything that could go wrong, which means that the moment I sit down to do work, my brain is not only using social comparison theory to make me feel terrible comparing me to everyone else that I read their work, but it's also then using this kind of negative skew to look for anything that'll go wrong and start pointing it out to me, like, oh, you're really gonna mess this one up. I bet that person would have done a better job. So yeah, I remind myself of the science. I ground myself. I do some breathing exercises. I also, I don't know if you've noticed, my jumper's quite fluffy. I often wear, when I'm stressed out, like really tactile clothes, and I ground myself by like being able to touch things that are soft or hold things that just bring me back into the present moment. So I have lots of little tricks like that that really help just bring me back into the moment.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I think imposter syndrome, depending on which survey or study you look at, affects between 50 and 100% of all humans at some stage or another. So it's just almost a universal thing that at times we're going to feel like we're not good enough, or that, you know, who am I to do this? It was just luck that I got here. So common. Yeah.
I once did a story on Instagram about Harry Potter. I love Harry Potter. And there's this, have you read it or seen it?
I may have watched the movies. I haven't read the books.
Okay. So in the movies, he's just got to Hogwarts and they like put the hat on, which will decide which house he's going to be in. And they're just the most beautiful description of imposter syndrome. Like, he's like, oh my God, they're going to realize I'm not meant to be here. And like growing up with Harry Potter, he's like a hero of mine, right? So the idea, when I read that, I was like, Harry Potter has imposter syndrome. Like, it's totally okay. I have it. I'm never going to be a magic wizard. So that helps.
You're in good company.
Yeah, exactly.
Good company. I was curious about, are there other things that you do for your own mental health, or your own mental well-being that help you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I said I have a therapist. She's a dream. I speak to her every week. That's been really important for me. I try and do this thing called morning pages. So it's a form of journaling. Have you heard of it?
Yeah.
It's just wonderful. Like, get up in the morning and write, just free write for 3 pages and just get it all out. And I think it's an unstructured form of journaling that allows me to make sense of that kind of ball of wool that often forms in our minds, where we have loads of thoughts going on, loads of feelings, but we're unsure what they are. And also, I think most of the time I'm in control, right? As in, like, I'm planning what I'm gonna say. I've learned about the topic I'm doing. Very rarely do I let myself just kind of freely tumble out everything that's inside my head and onto paper. So that's integral to me kind of offloading and allowing my mind some space to breathe. Running, which I'm very bad at and deeply dislike, but know that after I run, I feel amazing. So actually, yeah, so those 3 things, and surrounding myself with people who aren't afraid to say that they're flawed and talk about their vulnerabilities.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, I've spoken to a lot of people recently who run but say they hate it, but they do it for the mental well-being aspect.
Yeah, I mean, there are moments where I'm like, oh my word, this is great. I'm like, it's going so well. I've got my music on. But yes, I haven't reached that point where other people say, I just feel so good when you're running. It's just that I know that if I don't, I struggle. So
could you share some tools or some of your favorite tools that people can perhaps start to do at home? Anything for feeling calmer or happier or more confident?
Yeah. So this is always my go-to. I recently did this really wonderful little documentary with someone about it. Okay. So one of the reasons that we often feel not great is that we have this hugely negative skewed brain, and it's constantly chipping away at us, making statements about us that are often very untrue, but feel deeply untrue because our brain has told us so. And most of us are fused with our thoughts. So if I think it, it must be true. So one of my favorite things to do comes from ACT, this acceptance and commitment therapy. And I'm going to tell you 2 parts. Okay. So the first bit is a kind of really simplified idea around mindfulness, where you observe your thought. But what you do is multiple times throughout the day, You notice what's happening in your mind. So you notice what thoughts are there. And then you just repeat whatever thought it is with the beginning saying, I notice I'm having the thought that, and then you say, so for example, often when I do this practice, I did in this documentary the other day, the two guys I was doing it with, they both said, feel like an idiot was the thought that popped up in their mind. So you notice the thought was, I feel like an idiot. And you'd say, I notice I'm having the thought that I feel like an idiot. And you practice this multiple times. And the first thing is, by adding that sentence to the beginning, you're creating some psychological distance between your thought and you. Suddenly you can observe it. It's almost like moving away from it. So that's the first thing. Now, the next bit, and this is my absolute favorite bit, and it takes, it often takes a long time in therapy to reach a point for someone to say, yeah, yeah, I'll get on board with this idea. Yeah, it sounds great. People have got to trust you, is where you then start singing that sentence to a tune that you enjoy. You're smiling. You've heard of this, right?
I haven't heard of it, but I'm just smiling at the thought of.
It's so good. Now, the reason I say it takes time in therapy to get to this point is often people, what you do not want to ever be suggesting is we want to make fun of the thoughts that you're having, because our thoughts are deeply distressing and deeply personal. When we add the song to it, all we're doing is creating more distance between you and that thought. So I notice I'm having the thought that I'm an idiot. For example, you could do that to the tune of Jingle Bells. In fact, on the when I filmed the documentary with those two guys, these two New Yorkers, one of them sang theirs to Rihanna's Umbrella and the other one to Staying Alive. It was absolutely incredible. And we did all have a real giggle. It was a really lovely moment. But the idea isn't to make you laugh. The idea is just to give you this tool that can make you look at your thought in a different way and recognize it's just a line of text, a line of words. It's something that you can move away from and that will be replaced by something else. Ultimately, when you practice this loads of times, you do start to find that you relate differently to your thoughts. You not only have more distance, but there is some a certain kind of levity around it. But those are like my go-to for everyone. I think everyone could engage in right now and easily that would help.
I love that. Definitely going to be singing some some of my worries later on. And yeah, so just saying to yourself, I'm noticing that I'm having the thought about being an imposter, whatever it is.
Yeah, and you repeat the exact sentence in your head that you've had in your head, like, yeah, they're going to find me out. I'm going to do a terrible job. I notice I'm having the thought that I'm going to do a terrible job. I'm not going to sing for you, but imagine
I was
that.
I was hoping that you were going to.
I could see that look on your face. I was like,
Just expectant and waiting. I'm sure people listening, thousands of people are singing right now.
I hope about, so. You all, anyone who's listening, you should be deeply grateful that I did not do a vocal demo.
Oh, I love it. Thank you so much. That's been so, so helpful. I've loved everything you shared and I love your work and what you're putting out there, and I can't wait to see what other projects you have in the pipeline. Can you share about how people can find out more about you and what you're up to and get involved in what you're doing?
So my Instagram is @_DrSoph, so @_DrSoph. And every time I say this, I always ask, if anyone knows who the @DrSoph is on Instagram, please let me know. And it's always been quite hilarious that I'm @_DrSoph and people can never find me, and that there's this other Dr. Soph, we've never spoken. People always tag them in the things that I'm meant to be being tagged in. So yeah, hi, Dr. Soph, if you're listening, it would be great to talk one day, but I'm @_DrSoph. And then my website is drsoph.com, so drsoph.com, and I'm on Happy Not Perfect, the app, and all sorts of things like that.
Amazing. Thank you so much for talking to me today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I loved it.
You have been listening to the Karma You podcast with me, Chloe Brotheridge. Don't forget, you can download loads of freebies for anxiety and confidence at my website, karmayou.com. You can also find out about my app and my one-on-one sessions.
Please do subscribe to this podcast in the Apple Podcast app. And if you have enjoyed it or found it helpful, please leave me a review. It makes a massive difference to helping the podcast get discovered by other people. And come on over and find me on Instagram. I'm hanging out there every day. You can find me at Chloe Brotheridge. Let me know what you thought of this episode. And please do share it with anyone who might need to hear this today. So I'm sending you loads of love and I hope you have a brilliant week ahead.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.